Welcome to Fright School. Are you ready? Class is in session.
Welcome back to Fright School. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Joshua.
Ah, how are you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. You know, the week is going.
It is going. It's Mark.
Yes, it is Mars. It has recently come to our attention.
Mm-hmm. That it's time for Mars.
Well, not to start on necessarily a sad note, but, you know, we do like to do that occasionally, just start things off.
Sure.
Sadly. This week, Rico Browning passed away. He played the creature from the Black Lagoon in the underwater scenes.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, Ben Chapman had played the creature on land, but Rico did those incredible underwater sequences that really add to the film, obviously. And so, yeah, he passed away this week at, gosh, I think it said he was 93.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 93, which is incredible. You know, us spooky folks, I think we get to live longer.
Yes. By natural causes or supernatural causes.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, the more you try to scare folks and succeed, the more life you get.
Yes.
No, but that was sad news this week. Obviously, we did back last summer. We did our dive into Creature from the Black Lagoon, mm-hmm. and I read The Lady from the Black Lagoon. So I was just, you know, just one of those things where I was like, oh, that's sad. So just, you know, shout out to all the creature fans. You know, we share this morning together.
Yes.
What else has been going on? What did you do this week?
Not much. Just, you know, working.
Yeah.
Working a new job. I got a new job.
That's right. That's right. You moved to a new position.
A new position in a different organization.
There we go.
I work at a nonprofit now.
Look at her. She's a non-prof.
Yes, she's not. She's a non-pro. So, yeah, just, you know, learning new stuff. And it's a queer nonprofit. Yeah. So that's been really fun.
Yeah.
It's just like learning everybody. And I've the office that I'm in, I share with four other people. And apparently this office is the spooky office.
Cool.
This office goes all out, decorates for Halloween. People in there love the movies and stuff. So I feel like I've come home.
That's lovely. And see, if you would have never done this, you would be outside of that.
I know. You know? I'd be like, what is going on?
Well, that's awesome. That's a nice little serendipitous
yes
thing.
Well, you know, well, thanks to Dr. Heather Petrocelli for telling us that, you know, for proving that queer people have this inherent culture of queer horror.
Yeah, I think she's helping to show, you know, that it was always here.
Yes.
You know, she's revealing it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we in the know, we of the horror queers have always known.
Yes. we've already been new.
Yes. Exactly. That's exciting, though. I'm very happy for you. It's great that you have a new position. Hopefully it leads to more happiness for you.
I hope so, too. Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that.
What did I do this week? It's just been kind of a blah week. You know, I'm just in the drudgery of school and just trying to get through all the assignments and stuff, planning for my travel that's upcoming. And yeah, I did go see Cocaine Bear.
Ah,
which I tried to get you to come to, but you had some gay bullshit planned. So
yes,
you went to that instead.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite a ride, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was fun. I laughed. I'm not sure if it's really is the kind of thing that maybe we would cover on this show. Although I do have to say, a lot of the advertisements and like the conversation online has been like, you know, there's never been a movie like this. It's like it's its own new genre, and I'm just like, have these people never seen like all kinds of different movies. Yeah. Like, I was looking at a list. I was like, yeah, Jaws, Arachnophobia, Snakes on a Plane,
Lake Placid,
Anaconda, Cujo, The Birds, Tarantula, Them, Zombievers, Black Sheep. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I don't think it's really breaking a lot of new ground. If anything, it is the... It's like the Scream of animal attacks movies. Like, it's super aware of what it's doing.
It's very meta.
Very meta, I would say. It's firmly tongue-in-cheek, knows what it is. Super, super fun. But yeah, I just really kind of balked at the idea that it was like creating something new. I'm like, no, these kind of movies are like as old as you get. Like, yeah. I mean, you go back to early like sci-fi and horror films and you'll find, you know, something's wrong with the animals and mm-hmm. they're taking over. So yeah, I was watching it and I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if it can be overcomplicated. Like, it's really just a movie about a bear with that a cocaine habit. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I think it was because Elizabeth Banks, is that her name?
Yeah.
Who was Effie in The Hunger Games. And I think she was Rita Repulsa in the Power Rangers
yes,
remake.
She was.
Anyway, so she directed the film.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about, like, you know, of course, the typical things that you talk about when it's like, oh, when nature kind of turns against us, or mm-hmm. this idea that this poor bear in the 80s or 70s or whenever the actual event happened, because mm-hmm. it is based upon facts, quote, quote, quote.
true events.
Yes, true events where, you know, this bear did. I think the general idea of like the bags being dropped and being part of like the drug trade or whatever is true, and that the bag, you know, this bear did get into it and it died. You know, it got mm-hmm. it was, you know, cocaine poisoned, basically.
No.
And so her whole thing was like, well, like, what if it didn't? Like, what if it didn't die and like went on a rampage because it's like, you know, an innocent bystander in like the war on drugs? So she had this whole like heavy kind of like yeah. idea about it. You know, and it's a mother bear. So she has cubs and like, so it's a whole like conversation going on in the movie, I guess. But, yeah, I was just like, even I don't think I'm going to try. Like, I think you should watch it. I think it'd be super fun with a big group of people. I went yeah. with a big group of people. People yelled at the screen and heckled it and whatnot. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, I laughed pretty hard. There were some really, really funny moments.
Okay.
I wouldn't say there was any like scary. I mean, there was a few like jump scary kinds of things, but it wasn't like, it definitely wasn't like terrifying or anything.
Okay.
And I don't even know if it was trying to be, yeah, but it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And I think it'd be fun to watch here with like a group of people, get pizza, popcorn, you know, and
sure.
pair it with like, yeah, like Zombievers or some other really like eight-legged freaks, like just yeah. some kind of stupid animal movies. You know, or even something like more serious, like The Birds or something, you know, like, I think it could be fun.
I think Snakes on a Plane, probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Snakes on a Plane.
Because it just tells you, I love a title that just tells you what it's about.
That's
right?
True.
Snakes on a Plane, Cocaine Bear. Like, yeah. It's very, this is what you're getting.
Yeah. 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 So overall, I really enjoyed it. I would say at least the first 75% of the movie. The end got a little heavier and like deeper towards the end, or it was trying. Mm-hmm. And so it was like, oh, the tone shifted a little. But overall I enjoyed it. And so mm-hmm. I would definitely recommend it for a fun night. It's certainly not, you know, some masterpiece, cinema, but it was pretty funny. I mean, I laughed pretty hard at some of the moments. Plus just seeing people like, Margot Martindale is in it. She yeah. pops up. She's hilarious. That Jesse, what's his face?
Jesse Taylor Ferguson.
Yeah. From, Modern Family is in it in a really bad wig, like an offensively bad wig.
Carrie Russell.
Yes. Is that, she played, Felicity?
Yes.
But is that her? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Yeah, it's Carrie Russell.
Jeez.
But Carrie Russell and Margot Martindale were in The Americans together.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. That TikToker guy who like does the, you know, retail
yeah.
videos, he was pretty funny in it. He plays a paramedic.
So, do you remember my friend Jake who did the...
from State Farm?
No, my friend Jake, he lives in Baltimore. He did the Thwarp podcast, fans. He went to college with that guy.
Oh, wow.
So he was like very excited. So I guess he posted a picture with him and some of his other college friends going to the movies and like flipping off the camera, being like, fuck you for being famous.
Oh, oh, that's funny. Well, now I don't know if that's sweet or not, but
I mean, it's
they gave some money up for the film, right?
Yeah, it's sweet. Yeah. We'll choose to believe it is sweet.
There we go. Yes, we'll choose. It's that backhanded compliment, like, you know, oh, you're so famous, fuck you. But I'm gonna post, I'm gonna tell everybody I know that I went to school with you.
It's like, I love you, but fuck you. Like,
yeah. So, anyways, that's kind of it for the week. You know, Cocaine Bear. I would recommend it. It was fun. I would definitely go when there was an audience. The audience definitely made it more fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like horror is like that. Yeah. So, obviously coming up this week is the release of the new Scream movie, Scream 6. So we'll definitely go see that.
Yeah. Scree-avi.
It does look like that.
Scree-avi. That's what
the way they did the VI in it.
Yeah. Well, Ashley and I went to see, Ant-Man, the new Ant-Man movie.
Oh, the
Quantumania.
Yeah.
And the trailer came up, and we were just looking at each other, and she looked at me, and she was like, Scree-avi?
Scree-avi. So we had five cream.
And now Scree-avi.
It sounds like a Giallo film or something.
Yes. Dario Argento presents Scree-avi.
That's amazing. But yeah, so I figure we'll go see that and, you know, we'll tell the folks at home what we think. Mm-hmm. Our dear listeners.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, otherwise the only other thing I really watched this week, well, I have been kind of rewatching Bates Motel. That's because of a conversation at school, which reminded me. We had a whole, which I guess we'll talk a little bit when we get to the film we're talking to today, but we were sort of talking about mental health and horror. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one of my cohort, one of the women mentioned Bates Motel, and I was like, oh yeah, man, I really enjoyed that show. So I've been kind of like throwing that on at night at bedtime, you know, just kind of watching it a little bit before I go to sleep. So it's nice.
Wow.
Otherwise I did finish Heartstopper on Netflix. Mm-hmm. If you've been following along on the Patreon over there, we've been talking about Heartstopper last couple of weeks, so we'll be wrapping that up. Thank the Lord.
but you survived.
I survived the my teeth are all going to rot out from the saccharine sweetness of it all, but
get you Trulicity for your diabetes.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, if you want to hear more of that conversation, you'll have to join us over at patreon.com/frightschool. So yeah, you've tortured me with that this week. Otherwise, that was the week. Real simple.
Yeah.
You're not watching Drag Race, so we can't really talk about that. And it's fine. It's not much to talk about.
I don't know. I'm okay like being kind of left out of the conversation with Drag Race
these
days. I mean, I think I was just so oversaturated during the kind of height of pandemic.
Yeah.
I get it. Escapist and
yeah. And now we're dealing with all this. I mean, I don't want to get too into, I'm still trying to like figure out how, you know, we want to like talk about stuff, but these massive backlash against like queer people that's happening, you know, all over the country right now is really terrifying. So I don't know. There's part of me that's like, yeah, maybe we live in, you know, we have kind of a bit of a privilege to be kind of over Drag Race because of where we live and the culture that we're surrounded by. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to be a little, because places are like banning drag now and they're trying to, basically it comes down, they're trying to attack trans people. That's what all this is about. It's very, very terrifying. After spending the last like 8 weeks studying how like genocide happens and fascism and totalitarianism and how we internalize it, how it operates in society, what's been happening lately is really terrifying to me. It's very, very scary. Mm-hmm. So I feel, I don't know, it's just put me in a weird like mixed up place. But you know, if you know somebody who's queer or trans, you tell them that you love them, be an ally as best you can. We're living in scary times, folks.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Let's not marinate on it.
I know. It's just, yeah. So anyways, it's just, yeah, it's a really weird time. So anyways, that's why we need more queer voices. So more of us joining the conversation and talking about this stuff, especially for those of us who kind of live in, like, you know, a bubble for now. Yeah.
I feel like what I've kind of replaced my viewership of Drag Race mm-hmm. has been more to kind of support local queens.
That's true. Yeah, you've been very good about going to those sorts of events and all of that.
And I think what I love now is that, like, you really don't have to work too hard to find drag in our city being performed.
Yeah, that's very true.
And local queens, like, they're what's keeping it running. I went to a show in October that LaLaurie was at, and LaLaurie and Diabetti, and, you know,
Diabetica.
They were both the headliners, but at every point, anytime they were given the mic to talk, they talked specifically about, like, hey, these are the girls that live in your city that have been up here. They're killing it. Like, please, thank you for coming out to see us, but you need to make sure that you're also coming out to support your local queens.
Yeah, that's very, very true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I like seeing that kind of support and seeing that conversation. Yeah.
And it's like, it's very much like, you know, they are using their platform to help others succeed. Lift as you climb, right? What they say.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We just saw, you know, again, it's just very bizarre, you know, through the looking glass times we're living in. So just be vigilant, be safe, you know, all of that.
Yeah.
Just trying to be, I don't know.
Hopeful.
Hopeful. Yes, I'm not used to this. My, it's now nihilistic optimism. Or optimistic nihilism. That's what it is. That's the new thing. It's no longer existential dread. It's like, yes, things are going to, you know, we're all going to die, but we can have a little bit more hope along the way.
Yeah, but here's some cake. Eat some cake.
Yes, 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 yes. So,
that's the point of me making you watch Heartstopper, really, is to add more hope into your life.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, I think maybe resentment. It's also creeping
bitterness.
In there.
There we go. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be back to chat about Gothica.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey...
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and, ugh, the practical effects. and also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-o!
From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
All right, welcome back. So this week we are joining Miss Halle Berry in the psychiatric penitentiary. For 2003's Gothica. This movie has everything. So we're kind of truly has everything. We're transitioning out of, this is a nice, I think this is a good transitional film, because we, you know, spent the last couple weeks kind of examining, you know, further expanding on what we've learned in horror noir and talking about mm-hmm. black horror and that discussion we've been having. Sorry, my brain is like not working. And so we're transitioning now into Women's History Month. So we're going to be, the next couple weeks, we're looking at some I don't know. I don't want to say necessarily feminist horror films, but always, you know, horror films with the feminist. We're applying a feminist lens, maybe.
Yes.
So we're gonna be looking at. So I thought this was kind of a cool film to be a really nice transition for those, because I think that the film has some interesting, again, sort of like The Girl with All the Gifts. The fact that you know the main characters in this film, or the main character in this film, is a black woman, and then of course Penelope Cruz as Chloe. Like, there is kind of an interesting conversation happening about not sure. only women but also race in the film. So I thought this was kind of a nice transition into the next couple of weeks' discussion.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And because it's Women's History Month, we are reminded that women have to do everything. So, and this is one of those movies where, man, they're like, she's having to deal with it all. She's got to deal with she's a psychiatrist working in a penitentiary situation. You know, she's got her husband, she's got the demands of another coworker, then she's got fucking ghosts showing up and serial killers, and like, she's just everything that could possibly happen in a horror movie is in this movie. It's so packed with like everything. So again, it's just another reminder that women really do just have to do everything themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. That's the episode. Thanks for coming.
Bye, everyone.
Have a good day. No. all right, Joe. What did you think of your first viewing of La Gothica?
I really liked it. I really liked it.
Yay.
I don't particularly enjoy movies like this where it's someone who is questioning the nature of their reality. So I'm very doubtful to say that I would watch this again, but I was rapt the entire time. Also, like, I love a murder mystery.
Yeah.
They were very explicit about the supernatural elements, which was really good. Like, it was giving Hollow Man. Like, it was...
Oh. Yeah.
It was giving Hollow Man. It was kind of like... It kind of reminded me a little bit of Malignant. But yeah, overall, it was a good film. I don't know why I got so much hate when it came out, but
well, I mean, again, you know, I don't want to get too much into like a review territory. I do think there are some things in the film that kind of beggar belief. Again, it is very dense. There's a lot happening. There are some very questionable things, like as a mental health professional.
There's 20 minutes of no dialogue. Like, it's just Halle Berry looking frantic. And
right. This is true. Yeah, so we could talk some of as we kind of go along, but I think that, you know, again, this is very... I saw this movie when it came out. It came out the weekend or week before Thanksgiving in 2003, so I had graduated. This was... I was in college by now. I was in my first stint in college. And I'm trying to remember, because this is like... It's such a weird time in horror history that this comes out, because... We have, you know, Saw has yet to hit the screen. That's still a year away in 2004. So it's like at the beginning of, I feel like, you know, as horror was kind of taking that turn towards like really, really, really dark stuff.
Yeah.
That was to come, especially out of, like, we've discussed this before.
The Iraq
out of War. 9/11, yeah, out of 9/11, out of the Iraq War. You've kind of seen these really explicitly torturous horror films. You have this like strange movie come out with like Halle Berry as like a psychiatrist who like kills her husband but doesn't remember, and then there's ghosts, and you know, like I said, it was this very strange. And then The Ring had come out. When was that? 2001?
2002, I think.
Or 2002. So it's kind of in that time where and The Grudge. So you had like these horror films being led by women, you know, and exploring a lot of very complex, like, crimes against women. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just, yeah, it's such a weird movie. So I'm not exactly sure why the backlash was so bad, because I remember enjoying it when I saw it. I enjoyed it again watching it today. I've watched it several times. I have it on, I own it on DVD, if we remember what those are. You know, so I like the movie again, but I can see why there are things that are, like, you know, problematic in it. But to kind of set it up, I think one of the reasons I really like this movie is it's kind of, it reminds me of something like Hitchcock maybe would have made.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's got that kind of like Rosemary's Baby, you know, vibe, or other, like, yeah, like gothic, because that's why I think it's called Gothica. It's not necessarily, doesn't like, doesn't seem to refer to anything else in the film, like, as we're talking.
Yeah, I think I asked you, I was like, are they going to say what Gothica is? And you're like, no.
Yeah, just... I feel like it more captures a certain spirit. Yeah. Something else, I did read that there was this idea of Gothica with a C, I think, meaning, like, this, this idea of seeing things that other people can't. I don't know what that's rooted in. I don't know if that's an old, like, mental health term that's kind of gone out of date. Like, you know, we used, like, depression used to be called melancholia, you know, like that was something they treated, you know, like a deep melancholy. So I don't know if it's something that's, like, older, but that's what this evokes for me, which is one of the reasons I like it a lot. It's, like, dark and stormy. It's all blue, like that blue sheen over the whole thing. Mm-hmm. It's just, it gives me, yeah, those sorts of, like, Alfred Hitchcock, you know, and or Gaslight or whatever, those kinds of movies. It reminds me of that.
Sure.
So that's one of the reasons I really like it. And of course, it also deals with, I mean, you know, you think about this movie coming out before, like, the Weinstein and, like, the Me Too movement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you have this film where, again, like, I think it is very common in horror. We've discussed this. Like, you know, you have, like, the woman who's like, listen to me, and nobody believes her. I mean, that goes back to, I mean, early films, but things we've talked about on the show, like Alien, like, listen to the woman and her cat.
Yeah.
Like, don't, you know, so you have this, like, sexual violence going on in this penitentiary, and nobody believes them, of course. And that's a big theme of the movie is, you know, you can't trust someone who thinks you're crazy. So that's the, that's, like, I feel the pervading theme throughout.
Sure.
And then as we go along the movie, you're finding out different things about the male characters or other characters that really are true. But, you know, she had to like go in, she had to be institutionalized, like, to, you know, to reveal the truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
If that, you know, is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It was like, again, like you said, it evokes, like, a Hitchcock type thing. It has, like, I think that Halle Berry is doing a very, very good job as Dr. Miranda Gray.
Yeah.
Which, like, you gotta love that name, right? Like, it's such a horror movie, like, you know, Miranda. Her name is Miranda.
Right. Have you ever read this book?
No.
What John is... Foles, The Collector. So this came out in 1960. And I couldn't find any... I looked this up a few times. Like, there's got to be somebody that's made this connection. But anyways, this book came out in 1963 originally. It was published. Mm-hmm. And it's about this man. Oh, gosh. What is his name again? It's been a while since I've read this. Oh, what is his name? I can't remember. Anyways.
Maybe it's on the book jacket on the back.
No, it doesn't even say, like, anybody's name. Anyways, so, but it's about this man. It's told, this book is told, it's from his perspective, and then this woman in epistolary, she's writing letters or keeping a journal, I think. Anyways, but it's about this guy who becomes fascinated with this woman, Miranda Gray, and he kidnaps her and keeps her a prisoner.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that's what the book is about. And I really think that whoever wrote this, I feel like they had to have seen that or read this.
Yeah, made the connection.
Yeah. But when I looked online, I was like, I can't be the only person that's ever noticed that the lead character in The Collector shares the same name. Like, I just felt like there had to be something there about You know, and he's trying to convince her that she loves him. You know, so he's keeping her prisoner, and he's like, "I'm going to provide for you." He's like, "I'm not." He doesn't assault her. He's like, "That's not what this is about. It's just I just want you to be cherished." He collects butterflies, and she's beautiful, and he wants to collect her and keep her. And that's like the whole thing is like she loves him, and he's like obsessed with her. And so that's what the whole like story is about. So I just always thought it was interesting that this character, you know, it's a similar sort of, you know, it's the character's name, and then, you know, she's imprisoned. It's not exactly obviously an adaptation, but I just think there's some parallels between the stories.
Sure.
The book is really weird, and it's another one of those books that a lot of times you see these kinds of criminals who commit these sorts of sexually violent acts or serial killers, like. They have a copy of that book.
Really?
It's a common one for them to have, or that it gave them ideas or whatnot. But her name, Miranda Gray.
Interesting.
I just wanted to bring that up since you mentioned it. But sorry, go ahead. Unless you totally lost the plot of what you were going to say, I'm sorry.
I just love that you pulled that from your bookshelf and it was like, oh, here's this book that serial killers have. And, you know...
Actually probably owned that for 20 years. I think I bought it when I was 18 or 19.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Because the serial killer had it or?
No, I don't remember why. I don't remember why I picked that book up actually. I probably did read it in reference to something. I probably did. Cause that's the serial killer shelf over there. So I'm sure one of those things was like, he owned a copy of The Collector. And I was probably like, what's that? It's probably true. But it sits next to my copies of Whatever Happened to Baby Jane and Fight Club.
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane is a novel?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can I see it? Oh, we're just...
By Henry Farrell or Farrell.
We are just like, you know...
I know, we're just like off the rocker now, Joe. So I will talk... One of the other things that I like about this, which I actually was surprised that you didn't... leap onto, unless I'm sorry, before we go, was there another point you were going to make?
No,
about the name. You were just like
Miranda Gray,
she just sounds like a psychiatrist.
Yeah,
that just sounds like a horror movie name.
It really does. It's just like Miranda. No.
Okay, well, anyways, one of the things, because last year when you took over the show for a project you talked a lot about Catholic horror, and one of the big things in this movie is the Anima Sola, which I thought came from, it's a Catholic symbol, but it was one that you didn't recognize.
No, I had never heard of it before. The only thing I would know the word anima from is there's a prayer called the Anima Christi, which is like the blood of, it's like the sacred blood of Jesus. Type of thing, but I've never heard of the Anima Sola.
Well, it's a big part of this movie, obviously, and and it represents like several characters. So the Anima Sola is typically translates as like the lonely spirit. So it's a very particular image of a woman standing among flames, eternally burning yet never consumed. So I always thought that, and I like this, is her soul burning in the fire of hell, or does her heart burn with the fire of love? Allegedly unrequited love is what drew this poor soul into her predicament. The Anima Sola traded eternal salvation for the joys of temporal love. She is invoked in only the most desperate love spells. So this is kind of bringing out other versions of the Anima Sola in like magical traditions. But yeah, typically it's like a soul suffering in purgatory of some kind. And so you have at the beginning of the film, Chloe. Chloe's obviously one version of this Anima Sola, who is burning in a hell of... I mean, it's hard to tell... Exactly, because again, you know, the movie's set in a penitentiary, a psychiatric penitentiary. So this is a place where people who have been declared incompetent to stand trial or mentally incompetent, which typically means that whatever crime they committed, they've not been held legally responsible for because of, you know, they didn't understand at the time they committed the crime what they were doing was wrong, or some other mental health issue is what keeps them from going to like a regular prison.
Sure.
So she's there for the murder of her father or stepfather, who is likely, she says, sexually abusing her. Again, mm-hmm. we don't really get clarity on that. But she keeps saying that the devil visits her at night. You know, some man is coming into her cell.
Fills her with fire.
Yeah, fills her. Exactly. So you have Chloe. And then obviously when Miranda, Halle Berry's character in the beginning of the film, meets the girl on the bridge who seems to also be, she bursts into flames.
Yeah.
So she's in like more of a literal purgatory, because we know this is the spirit that's trying to guide her mm-hmm. to like the truth of yeah. what's happening. And then of course we do see the tattoo later in the film on one of the villain's bodies of the Anima Sola actually burning. And yeah, so I just think I like the use of that imagery throughout the film, and that it applies in kind of different ways to different characters of being these, you know, lonely people who have to like figure, you know, who have to like work through this horrifying realities that they're living in.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was interesting that, I mean, again, I'm not sure how widespread things like these are, because I know there's like different saints and different, but those are also can be culturally specific, right? It's not like every Catholic knows about every kind of.
Exactly. And it, from what, when it came up in the film, I did like a quick little internet look up and saw that it's something that is more widely known about in like the Catholic traditions in like Latin America, and some other similar cultures. But that's the thing, is that like, you know, stuff like that, you know, is the kind of Catholic mythology of things. Only kind of applicable to depending on the culture of it too, because it's and the idea of like purgatory, right? Like that's the other thing, that the image itself reveals kind of a very specific view of purgatory, right? It's like you're purgatory is just, it's the midway point between like heaven and hell, right? It's not heaven, it's not hell. You're just kind of stuck there until, and so like the idea that like you're being consumed by flame, you're being surrounded by flame but not consumed, is like terrifying. It's very terrifying. And
it's a really scary image.
Yeah. And that idea that like, you know, the, at least from a like a purgatory standpoint, is that most people think that like there's just nothing there, but this one offers, it's like, it's actually quite hellish. It's the idea that you can still feel the fires of hell, but not be consumed by them, which is terrifying.
Whew, yeah. It's a very heavy, kind of, image. Yeah. And again, it applies to this film, you know, very well, like the horrors of being a woman. I think about our conversation when we had about 28 Days Later, like the horrors of being a woman in the apocalypse. Well, what about just the horrors of being a woman in general? You know, having something so horrific done to you, and you tell people and they don't believe you, or worse, they do believe you, but they blame you, or they, you know, want mm-hmm. to protect whoever it is that is doing the horrible thing. And this movie, again, it's very dark. I mean, when you sit back and you really think about the crimes we're talking about, because you have Miranda Gray murders her husband, and then we find out in watching the movie that he has some, you know, torture chamber in his like house out in the country that he and his buddy kidnap women and film torturing them. And he says it very early in the film, either. Remember when he talks about how he's God?
Yeah.
Which is so interesting, because that's what like the murders for him is about, like playing God. And you pointed out the defibrillator in the room, which is like, they don't use it. It's just put there. And it gives you that idea of like, they want to be able to, like, if they accidentally like, push, they want to bring them back so they can keep torturing them.
Yeah.
So it just adds a whole other layer of just like fucked upness. And then on top of it, the first victim is their friend's daughter.
The coworker.
Yeah. The coworker. Yeah. But also it feels like they were all friendly together, and they're like colluding to murder his daughter. I mean, it's just so fucking disturbing.
Yeah.
And so again, it's this like, microcosm this whole film is a microcosm for like the worlds of women, you know, the imprisonment mm-hmm. of like of the patriarchy, the demands of it, the horrors of it, of being like imprisoned by it. And we're told to like, you know, these are like respectable people. One's a sheriff, you know, we're supposed to yeah. respect that authority. One is, you know, a brilliant psychiatrist running this, you know, mm-hmm. penitentiary program, you know, for women, you know, ideally to make them better, you know, yeah. to help them work through whatever horror happened to them that made them commit the crime.
Sure.
And all the while they're, you know, these monsters. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I wonder if maybe that's even the thing, like back when the movie came out, like it just seems so like, how could these men be so monstrous? But yeah. now when we look back 20 years later, it's so easy for us now because so many men that, yeah. you know, every yeah. time something happens, you're like, but everybody likes that guy, you know, or like in Hollywood with the whole thing with like the yeah. Me Too movement and, you know, all of that. It's like, these aren't like the paranoid delusions of crazy women, you know, yeah. which has always been used mm-hmm. to belittle women. Like that's the first thing that they say, oh, mm-hmm. she's crazy. Yeah. So yeah, it takes on a whole other context in the world we live in now, especially.
Yeah. I wonder, because we're about 20 years, right, removed from when this film came out.
Well, we are, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess in November, but...
Yeah, but just, I mean, just about. Yeah. So I'm curious as to what the cast members would say now about it, right? Mm. Like, we have... and what, like, Halle Berry would say, too. She's just so good in this. Like, I...
Yeah, her and...
Chloe,
Penelope Cruz.
Yeah, Penelope yeah. Cruz. Like, I think I told you that, like, after that whole scene with that interview with Chloe, I was like, damn, this is the best thing that I've seen Penelope Cruz do. She just, like, is so committed to the yeah. role. You know, that's not to say that I didn't love her and other stuff, but, like, this
no,
was just,
yeah.
this
yeah.
was just, like, pitch perfect, the kind of,
yeah, she tapped madness. Into something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I think about how actors, like, you know, are successful, like when I see something that I think is a successful acting gig like this, I'm just mm-hmm. like, wow, what did she reach for that? Like, mm-hmm. what did she get in mm-hmm. touch with? Because it is so vibrant and feels very real.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, you kind of have this whole. That whole sort of conversation happening about women and the lives of women and what happens and, you know, how these stories get told or how we, you know, fight a system that seems, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Insurmountable. Obviously, Halle Berry's got a ghost on her side. So
yes.
This is obviously a very different, you know, conversation because she, you know, has a supernatural being helping her escape the, you know, the prison and get to, you know, to unveil everything that happens. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've just always really, yeah, I've always really, really liked this, movie for those reasons. It does feel very gothic. Like I said earlier, it does feel very immediate. These are conversations that have not gone away in mm-hmm. in the 20 years since it came out, and certainly in the hundreds of years before it existed. So another thing that, you know, obviously we can talk about in this movie is the depiction of the psychiatric penitentiary and behavioral health professionals in general.
Sure. I wonder, Joshua, who would have the insight into, who could we talk to that might have insight about behavioral health professionals?
I don't know.
Is it in the mirror?
In the mirror, right, yes. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, so how the media, you know, obviously plays a powerful role in our collective consciousness. Television and film, they unfortunately or fortunately, for better or worse, play a really educational role.
Sure.
in the lives of the public, of how we interpret things. And so this is a little bit from I'm going to quote myself. So what is this? Parenthetical Napier, comma 2022.
Oh, she is quoting herself.
So this is from a paper I wrote called Horror Films and it's actually called Children Can Be Nasty, Conduct Disorder and the Horror Film. The horror genre alone has contributed to some of the most stigmatizing examples that exist on film. This is about the responsibility that media has for what people believe about mental health and mental illness. The popular lexicon around mental illness is informed by horror pictures like Psycho and Split, which have given us monstrous depictions of people suffering from dissociative identity disorder, mm-hmm. Which is an incredibly traumatic condition. And typically, the patients are in far more danger to themselves than they are to others, but that's mm-hmm. generally the truth. But not only do mental health conditions become warped and twisted to fit a horror narrative, but so do the institutions and professionals working in them. Psychiatric hospitals become darkly lit, unkempt asylums housing the criminally insane in terrible conditions. Psychiatrists and therapists become their own kind of monsters up to suspiciously nefarious schemes. Creatives say they make harmless entertainment, but there is an effect on audiences' beliefs and what we call mental health literacy. And that is their understanding of mental health diagnoses, treatments, and whether or not audiences share similar beliefs to mental health professionals. Spoiler alert, they do not. I think why I brought this up is because I think in this movie, we kind of see this. It's very dark. It's very dim. The lights flickering on and off. It's like, what kind of place is this that you all have built? It's like the perfect horror movie psychiatric hospital.
Sure.
Again, I've not been to many prisons, so I'm sure, again, I did have to kind of keep reminding myself watching this that it's a prison.
Yeah.
But even so, that's kind of the same thing. It's like, they're always these, big, scary sorts of places in horror movies. So I don't think it's quite believable, obviously. I think that's mm-hmm. one of the big issues that I think generally, with the movie is kind of that depiction of the hospital is a little like, again, it's a horror movie. I get it. But it's the truth. It's like mm-hmm. very disturbing. I also think it's really ridiculous that if she committed a crime that they would put her in the prison that she worked at and then release her into public like gen pop with people that she treats. That also is utterly ridiculous.
Well, yeah, it's she walks into like the day room or whatever the fuck, like the big area, and it's like, that's Dr. Gray. That's Dr. Gray. And I'm like, yeah. She's been like interviewing these people. Yeah. She's the reason why some of them are still locked up or, are it wouldn't make sense, right? And anyone, I'm surprised we didn't go there with that storyline of like someone with a vendetta against her. Like, cause Chloe doesn't necessarily, I think they hinted at that a little bit with Chloe's character, but it's not anything like once she's in there, you realize that doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the big, like, what? That would never happen. Like, they would drive, they drive people to other cities for mm-hmm. trials by jury where they don't know anybody. They would have put her, like, somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I get they try to kind of just explain it because it's, like, their friends and her, Robert Downey Jr.'s, that's his name, right?
Yeah.
The Iron Man, you informed me.
yes, he's like, we're... I think he kind of sets it up, but it's very brief right when they meet after the murder, supposedly, where he's like, this is a temporary situation while they're figuring out like when you're going to go to trial or whatever.
Yeah. But they still would have kept her like isolated, maybe bring her food. They would not release her there. And the whole thing, it's like there are codes of ethics.
Yeah.
And...
because like now all these people who just 15 minutes prior in this movie, it's all people she has relationships with.
Right.
Like they...
that she's over in some way. She's like directing them, to do things for her.
Exactly. And now she's in a position... and she wasn't like mean about it and it didn't look like she had any enemies really. And now she's like one of the inmates and they're going to have... like, even then, like, you, the staff that are working there, you can't switch that off entirely. Like, they made that nurse, Irene, they made her be the one who was the most successful at, like, you know, wash away your sins. And I was like,
yeah, but that's, like, one of the notes I made. It's like, man, they are so comfortable with, like, subjugating her and, like, humiliating her.
Yeah.
Like, making her get naked in front of and take, I mean, I get it. Like, that's, like, that is the situation. It's a prison. So it's a big open shower. But I don't know. I just feel like even if this was the case that we can't put her anywhere else in the whole fucking world.
Yeah.
They would
couldn't
still
make her go take a shower after them.
Exactly. They would have done some kind of accommodations because of just pure safety. Like, I mean, that's like a lawsuit waiting to happen that I think that she could win, you know? So it's like very disturbed. Like that is the parts of the movie that do sort of like, I don't know about this. There's also a conversation about, like, competence, which we talked a little bit earlier about. But, like, that's, you know, that's something else that a lot of movies get wrong. And even the attorney, like, in this movie, he's talking about it, and I feel like it's in that wrong way. So, typically, if you're declared mentally incompetent, you go to, like, a psychiatric hospital instead. Sometimes it's until you're stable enough to actually stand trial. But if you are imprisoned, a lot of times that's not a good thing. Like, people are like, oh, they'll get off on, like, insanity. That's not a thing.
Yeah.
And in fact, a lot of times you'll probably get way more time in the psychiatric hospital than if you went to prison. Like, just the way that it sometimes works. Because a lot of times people never get out. Like, you might murder somebody and get out, you know, in 20 or 30 years, depending on the crime and how it's tried, what the actual, felony is or whatever it is.
Sure. If it was murder versus man's laughter.
Right. Yes, man's laughter. Exactly. So there's almost more like, there's a better chance that you would get out if you just served a prison sentence. A lot of times, what do they call it? Hospital for the criminally insane. Like, you're probably there for life. Most likely. It's not always, this idea that people like, oh, I've been declared mentally incompetent to stand trial and I'm just going to go home. That's not what happens.
Well, yeah, because I think a lot of people that makes you more dangerous, right? Because you don't know that you either don't know or are not aware of what it is that you did. Why would they put you back on the street, right?
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't say it necessarily makes you more dangerous, but the system definitely.
Yes.
That wouldn't make any sense for the system to be like, oh, this person, chopped somebody to bits and has no memory of it. So, let her go home. Like, of course, that doesn't make any sense. But I do think a lot of times people, when they discuss it in the media and stuff of like, we can't let them be declared, insane because they'll get off. It's like that's not what will happen. No, they'll just be locked up in a hospital for the rest of their life on Haldol or whatever cocktail they're giving her throughout this movie. So that was just another thing that I was like, that whole conversation is weird because an attorney should, and she would know as a psychiatrist that I'm like stuck here. Like, this is not a good situation. But back to the the whole stuff with the nurse and all, it's just really fucked up because it is. It's almost like they're all like, it just feels like they're like happy.
Yeah.
To like be taking her down and putting her in this situation. It's super gross. It's very, very uncomfortable.
And there's no hint about that in the beginning, right? Like, if there was like a hint of it in the beginning where, there's like maybe she crossed the nurse or something, you know what I mean? Like, where there's no hint of it at all. So it makes it surprising and uncomfortable when they're just so willing to let her be this inmate.
Yeah. It's just very, very disturbing. And again, that's where like those things, the choice to, I never read the script, so I don't know the choices they made in acting, if that was something from the script or just kind of happened, like they decide to hire Halle Berry. So of course, then Halle Berry being a black woman, that adds a layer to the conversation when we talk about, and we discussed this a little bit with the girl with all the gifts, but the history of, – like medical experimentation on black bodies and that sort of thing. So there is a, you know, there are statistics that like, I think it's like 25%. Yeah, 25% of black people seek mental health treatment when needed compared to 40% of white people. You know, so there are these disparities. And again, sometimes for good reason, obviously. It's not as if the, you know, the mental health, psychiatric, medical community has been all that great to non-white bodies historically.
Sure.
You know, you have that. There is also, there's a lot of racism in the decisions that get made. So for instance, one of the things I looked at in the paper that I wrote, see if I can find it. Shoot, I wish I would have pulled that up earlier. There was a really good paper written by why can I never find what I what I wanted to find? Oh, yeah, here we go. So Courtney Van Hook, he wrote a paper called Racial Disparity in the Diagnosis of Conduct Disorder. And so African-American / black youths in particular are underdiagnosed with conduct disorder because they are more likely to be sent into the justice system rather than receive therapeutic interventions. You know, so like systemic racism also plays a really big role in how people are treated. That's something that the new DSM, the text revision that they just released, the DSM-5TR, it's called, added all these cultural components and all of these sort of new analyses of diagnoses and how they're applied or not, or how they should be considered when we think about the cultural context that a person lives in or experiences. But still, I think, again, if, you know, this movie had, I don't know, some other, you know, woman at the, who was famous at the time, I don't know, who would have been another 2003 white lady. Anyways, could have been any of them.
No.
It maybe wouldn't be making exactly the same kind of conversation that happens here. And so the subjugation of her and the humiliation of her after she had been, you know, kind of in this position of like power and respect, it's really gross.
Yeah.
And then that's echoed when you look at the way that her husband is like subjugating and torturing these other women. It's just this like, it's very, the whole movie just has a whole conversation about dehumanizing women, dehumanizing black women, you know, in ways that's much more profound, I think, if Halle Berry hadn't been the lead.
Yes.
I think it just adds. And again, and that echoes the conversation we had about, the girl with all the gifts, that choice, or all the way back to Night of the Living Dead.
Sure.
That when, you know, that the optics of it matter and add something. Let's see. Was there any... there's no way to really like end on like too positive a note.
This won't be, just for, you know, for folks out there, this is not the last kind of movie where... Halle Berry plays someone who is dealing with mental illness. In 2010, she did a movie called Frankie and Alice, based on true events about a woman who has DID, dissociative identity disorder. One of the identity, she's a black woman in like the 60s, and then one of the identities is like a white racist named Alice. And so it's a drama with Stellan Skarsgård, with one of our
Scandahoovian Baldwins.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know. I had to look it up because I remember her making the rounds in like the talk show rounds, doing press for it. But it was like an indie that never really went anywhere. But just throwing that out there, if you want to pair this as a Halle Berry double feature.
I love that. So Halle Berry meets, what was it? It's
Halle Berry, Stellan Skarsgård meets, Halle Berry is a go-go dancer who has dissociative identity disorder.
But it's, what's it called again?
Frankie and Alice.
Frankie and Alice.
So Frankie is the main person.
Gothica /
Yes.
Frankie and Alice. Okay. That's interesting. I've never heard of that movie. I'll have to look that up, too.
I just really don't like the fact that they don't tell you what the fuck Gothica is. Like, you know, there's no satisfaction of, like, you know, exposition where, like, I was expecting the older doctor, Dr. Parsons, the one who's the father of Rachel, to be like, they say that Gothica is this thing, blah, 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 blah. Like, to have him be the character with the exposition, but we don't get it. And I guess at that time, they were just like, you can fucking Google it.
Yeah, the only thing, like I said, the only thing I can find is it's an unofficial term used to describe a form of purgatorial state of mind, a situation in which someone sees or feels things that no one else does. Mm. And those who don't think those, and those who don't think those who can are crazy. Crazy.
Mm.
Yeah, I don't know. It made a whole bunch of money, made like over $140 million. But yeah, it was generally panned by critics, again, because they hate women, especially black women.
Mm-hmm. And she had...
I have no proof of that for this particular movie, but I just believe it.
That year, Halle Berry also was in like X-Men 2.
Yeah, she was busy.
It was the year before Catwoman.
Yeah.
Which she would go on to be like... the butt of every joke for the next 5 years, 10 years.
Which again, I don't feel is necessarily her fault.
No.
I still don't understand how they fucked that movie up so bad. You know, you have, I mean, at that point,
Sharon Stone,
like 70 years of Catwoman mythology to pull from, and you do that shit. It just made no sense to me.
Yeah.
It was so depressing. It's not the Catwoman film we deserved. I also don't think it's really that bad. I mean, if you just kind of separate it from like the Selina Kyle conversation and just kind of take it for what it is. You know, Frances Conroy, she's fun.
She's in it?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, she's like the cat lady or whatever, with the Egyptian Mao or whatever that...
Mm.
I think the magic comes from... I haven't seen it in a really long time, so I'm not saying it's necessarily a great movie, but I just, you know, I don't know. I think in general, I don't really understand hatred for movies. Like, just, you know, if it's not your thing, just keep it rolling. Like, yeah. Who cares? Whatever.
If it's not your thing, shut the fuck up.
Yeah. But, yeah, I didn't really think it was that bad. But again, I struggle because I like listen to people talk about something that they really hate. And I'm just like, oh gosh, I thought it was kind of fun or I enjoyed that. I just think as a fan of Catwoman, it just wasn't really a Catwoman movie. They could have called it anything else. They could have made up something else and just done their own story.
Woman Cat.
Right. The Woman Cat.
Yes.
You know, that's, you know, it just because you just have so much delicious Catwoman history mm-hmm. to make a film about. And yeah. There's just a lot of weird choices in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
This, again, there is a lot going on. It's a very convoluted kind of story. And there's things that's like, well, yeah, I don't think that would happen in the real world that are, you know, mm-hmm. that is, I think, a problem just in informing people about what is and isn't, you know, mental health treatment or what it looks like or,
yeah.
you know, other issues. But again, it's also a horror movie. So, and we love to use mental illness and its subsidiaries as as fodder. All right, Joe, did you have any other last minute thoughts?
It was a good movie.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
I am surprised actually about how much I enjoyed it, but I did enjoy it very much.
Well, that makes me happy. I enjoyed it too. I'm glad we enjoyed it together.
Again, would not watch it again of, you know, how kind of really... I did not expect it to be that deeply
it's
disturbing.
It's dark, yeah, yeah. It's
at the
a dark
end,
movie.
But yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, yay.
All right.
Thank you for listening, as always, dear listener, and we will see you next week.
Bye. Fright School is produced by Joshua Napier and Joe Farron.
Our intro was edited by Davey Boy Productions.
Our logo was designed by Jamie Channel Guzman.
Episodes are edited and engineered by Joe Farron.
Fright School is produced in terrifyingly beautiful San Diego, California.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.